Welcome everybody to another episode of Amplify Your Business. Today we're going to be talking to a legit rocket scientist. Okay, so with me today is Zay Peters. He is the CEO of Beam City. And I can't tell you how excited I am to talk to you, Zay, because what you've created is something that's right within our company's wheelhouse. And I think we could be a customer of yours very soon. So before we get into that, though, I want to say welcome to the show.
I appreciate you bringing me on, Lance. You know, I've been waiting for this interview for several days now, and I'm really excited to be on here with you.
Excellent. Well, let's jump right into it then. So as an entrepreneur yourself, what do you think or feel are three key things that every entrepreneur should know?
If you decide you want to be an entrepreneur, what are the three key things you need to know? Well, from my journey, I'm going to simplify it to these. Number one, you need to know you cannot do it alone. A lot of people kind of, you know, there's the saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go with people. The truth is you should at least get one or two other people as early as you can. That way you can go as fast as possible and as far as possible. You're going to burn out otherwise. That's number one.
Yeah, great advice.
Number two, you got to have a network, right? You know, it kind of plays with number one, but really number two is about, you know, who do you know, right? Who are your friends? Who are the people who can help your business grow? Who is giving you advice and reviewing all your thoughts? Because, you know, you might be a genius, but if anybody else doesn't understand what you're selling, you're not going to sell anything. So, you know, like they say, your network is your net worth. It actually matters all across the board. So make sure you're going out there and networking. That's number two. Number three is don't underestimate the value of money. A lot of entrepreneurs go in, they come in with $500. You know, they've had the story of the CEO of Spanx that started a company on $500 and became a billionaire, but that shit is not real. Usually what happens instead is you spend your $500 and then you're broke and nothing's happening. So you want to leverage your team, you want to leverage your network, but you need to have resources. Without the resources, you can't hire, you can't use tools, you can't even get AI systems that will help you out. You can't get on a bus and travel across the country. So if you're trying to start a company on nothing, if you're trying to be an entrepreneur doing starting a company from blank, $0, it's going to be extremely hard. It's not impossible, but make your life easier. You know, ask friends, ask family, you know, go out and find that rich dude in your street that seems to buy too many Lambos and become friends with them, ask questions. Maybe they can do business with you. But if you've got no team, if you've got no network, if you've got no money, you're going to have a hard time.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So thank you for sharing those pieces of wisdom. And I am really, really interested in hearing you explain what Beam City is, because this is in the marketing space, the growth space, the sales space, and you're applying a bunch of AI to it in all of your rocket science background, I suppose, right? So it's really cool. And I'm excited to hear you explain exactly what you guys are doing over there.
Yeah, I'll tell you about the company, but I'll give you a bit of a preamble so it flows a little better. So my background is in aerospace engineering out of Cornell University, but you know, just despite working on robotics and microgravity, I spent the last 15 years building and releasing a lot of applied AI, e-commerce platforms, consumer goods, in fact, about 11,000 SKUs. And what I found while building and launching all of these products was, we would always kind of settle into two key questions, you know, who's this for and how do I get these people? And obviously every company tries to solve these using dozens and dozens of different tools. You might have heard of the marketing stack. That's all the tools that you use to get to the result at the bottom. Problem is there, you know, we counted about 17 different workflows that you have to go through to do a really good job, you know, whether it's the research phase, strategy, content creation, optimization, attribution, click fraud, follow through. Marketing teams deal with this, sales team deal with this. It's actually weirdly similar, you know, and with my background in aerospace, we are literally trained to figure out complex systems, simplify them and make them work. And yep. I applied this into this space. And that's where Beam City came out. So Beam City as a company makes a platform that is what we call a growth coordination platform. What it does is it helps you to use AI and in some other cases, just simple automations to guide and maximize your results on advertising, email, and social media from one place. So you're not tab jumping. You don't have a whole pile of spreadsheets that you're dealing with. You're not growing inefficiently. You can come into one platform, keep your HubSpots, keep your ads, keep your social, but manage them with the help of an AI guide. So it's a growth coordination AI platform.
Yeah, which is huge, because anybody that I've talked to knows that, you know, I really preach that you have to have a full system approach, a holistic approach to your marketing and sales. If you are missing some of those ingredients and just looking at one or two tactics, you're not going to get the return on, you know, what you're spending on marketing and advertising and so on. And so it's all the integration of all that. So it's all working in harmony. Now, to put your layer of technology on top of it that's AI powered is just absolutely brilliant, because you're going to be able to manage all that much more effectively and efficiently.
Absolutely. The way we see this is, you know, many people think that marketing is pure art, but if you're a good marketer, you know, it's a lot of science. It means you're always experimenting. You're always testing things out. But most people are not trained in any form of science. Most people don't know how to do an ADD test. Most people don't know that, hey, if you're doing marketing, you should probably test a whole bunch of things out first before you double down and spend the big dollars, you know, spend the big moolah. And so because of that, we have, I would say 90-something% of marketers fail on a regular basis. And that's why agencies exist, right? Because you got, you know, agencies know exactly and have gone through the process so many times, they can help you solve it. And solve the problem with video, solve the problem with ads, email, etc. But a platform like ours means that the life of an agency becomes a lot easier, but also the life of a growth executive, whether you're VP or CMO or a head of sales, you can come into one place and literally see your strategy working. You don't have to jump from tab to tab.
Yeah, exactly. And so in today's world, where we have all of this data that's coming from marketing, because it's digital, and so things can be tracked, right? And having all those signals coming into one place that is going to then allow the system to be more informed, right? So that the processes and everything are
I'd rather say to let the people to be more informed, because it's ultimately exists to make the life of a growth specialist or executive easier. They don't need to slave away all day trying to figure out what all the data means. It can look at it and give you some interpretations, and then you can say yes or no. You're gonna execute, and then you go.
Yeah, totally. So now I'm really curious, though. So why did you pivot from, you know, this work that you were doing, you know, on the engineering side of things? And you said microgravity and all these other terms that I don't understand. why did you pivot from that into the marketing world and building a better tool here for growth?
Well, it's not a pivot to me. So for me, I've always been very interested in lots of different things. I used to make video games. Right. So if you look at it, it's really the thread of intelligence. So in video games, you make NPCs. They're all smart in some way. They've got their role. They go do it. In the world of robotics, the robot has effectors, you know, playing with things out in the world. The ones that we worked on were about using innovative mechanical processes to reduce power consumption. And we reduced it 95%. Now, in the world of advertising or marketing and social media and all of these things, humans are overwhelmed, right? You come in and you can't tell heads or tails. In fact, for a lot of small businesses, they don't know how to start. And so if you can build an AI system that helps make life easier for businesses in this new digital economy, you can help the economy grow. And frankly, you can build something people need. And so really for me, it's more about the thread of intelligence that joins all these things together, but using that skill of making complex simple applied into growth for businesses in the new online age, that's what attracted me.
Interesting. Yeah, I like how you're really distilling it down to you know, the intelligence part of it and just really
very key.
yeah. Okay, so I'm really curious because we didn't talk about this beforehand, but how long have you been at this then and developing you know, this platform?
Yeah, so the DNA has existed since the beginning of 2020, just before COVID came and shut down the world. Okay. The company has been alive for a bit longer. We started out a little differently, but we decided that we're going to build an AI-driven growth conductor. That was literally the goal. But in order to do so, we started off making it more look like an ad tech company, you know, creating the integrations into all these advertising platforms, and then building out the automations, building out the AI to help make that piece work. Once we got to a position where we felt that, okay, we've got a really good model, great interfaces, we've got integrations to 21 plus channels, let's expand this and start approaching the growth conductor. That is our ultimate goal. And that's where we are today. So hence DNA is the growth coordination platform, because it's coordinating today, but in a couple of years, it'll be conducting for you. You tell it what you want, it'll help you do the research, blah, blah, blah. And then all you got to do is say go.
Yeah. Yeah. Which just sounds absolutely brilliant. And again, like I said,
a lot of work though.
Yeah. 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 Like it's going to be something that's going to revolutionize. It sounds like anyway, our industry on the advertising agency side of things.
Absolutely. Yeah. On the agency side of things, agencies who exist will be able to use this and give customers superior results with better margins. That's really what you want.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me then, what has been the biggest challenge for you to, you know, start this company right at the beginning of COVID and grow it through COVID? So what have been the things that you've had to overcome so far?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the three advice points that I gave in the beginning apply to me too, right? You know, so wisdom sometimes is not automatic. You have to go through the pains to gain them. And so, growing the team appropriately, hiring the right kind of people, that was definitely a big deal. We're bootstrapped for this company. So that means I've grown this company on my funding, friends and family, like I said, the uncle with the Lamborghini, but also the use of a lot of government grants, right? So learning how to go after these sources of capital and apply them in the most effective, efficient way possible in my business, because we're really what we're building is something that, you know, by all rights, we shouldn't be able to build on the budgets we're running on. But with some ingenuity, with a lot of hard work, speaking with people so that they're all the way bought into the dream means that you can do it. And so that has been the key thing. It's just getting the resources needed to build. Now, other than getting the resources needed to build, it's also, you know, I'm an engineer by, I don't know if say by birth or something, but anybody who knows engineers knows that we're not naturally good at speaking with people. We're not great at sales by default. So learning how to build out that sales muscle, smiling on phone calls, dressing correctly, speaking to people, listening correctly, and learning how to understand the problems people actually have, That was a bit of a challenge. You know, I gotta say, you know, many people see me now and they think, oh man, Zay Zay sounds like an extrovert, but extrovert is not Zay Zay. After this call, I'm going to go take a nap. You know, I've got to go out and be the person that's necessary to make this succeed, to help the customer win. Yeah. And if that's not the person I am today, then I got to be better. That's what I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Really interesting. So in terms of just the 2.5 years here that you've been, you know, running the business and things have been trucking along really smoothly now. I'm really curious if you were to pen yourself a letter, you know, go back, send it back to you the 2.5 years ago, or even maybe before that, before you even started to percolate on this, this venture, this new idea, what would be in that letter? What would you write yourself? What kind of advice would you give yourself?
Oof, a back in time letter.
I've never thought
about a back in time letter. You know, usually it's worded, what would I tell a younger version of me? But then I can just tell that to a 7-year-old version. But if it's a version of me from a few years ago, what would I tell myself? I would tell myself, focus on sales earlier. This is a mistake I see in Canada a lot. In the US, the prevailing wisdom is sell first, build later, which is interesting. It does mean that we end up with a lot of, you know, not so ethical products, but, you know, there is some wisdom in it, all right? Because sales cures all ills is one of the phrases you'll hear in the startup world. Yeah. And out of the startup world as an entrepreneur, if you can't pay your bills at home, obviously you're going to have major issues. So think about sales. If you're an engineer, you don't know how to do it, read up, get on YouTube, learn a whole pile. YouTube is your friend. This is not a new problem. Humans have been selling for 10,000 years. Yeah. Figure that shit out. And so if I wrote a letter back to me a couple of years ago, I would say double down on sales, definitely still build and think up tech, but get better at it sooner.
Yeah. So one of the things that is common, I think, for all software companies, companies who are building these software as a service businesses, is that you have in the early days, you know, that minimal viable product just doesn't have the features that, you know that you want to have or that the market needs. And so the selling faster, sooner I'd imagine particularly a problem for your type of business, because it's like, well, it's not right where I want it to be. And so how do you do that? How do you know when you're ready to actually start to commercialize it when you know that your roadmap for the application or for the software, you're nowhere close to where you want it to be?
Very, very great question. And this is where customer development comes through. So when I say sales, in the very beginning phases, when you don't have a lot of tech, sales looks like customer development. That means go find 100 people, talk to them about what you're making. Hopefully you're solving a problem they have that they're not solving in any other way.
Yeah.
And if that is what you're doing, they'll be able to help you to, you know, either via survey or by intuition. You know, some people learn by intuition, some people learn better by survey. You can then figure out, okay, where should I spend 80% of my effort right now to get that 80% benefit that the customer cares the most about? Not everybody cares about an undo function. Not everybody cares about PDF reports right away. Sometimes there's just this one specific immediate business need that if they can't solve it in some fashion right away, they're going to be bust. So solve that piece first. Everything else reporting, humans will do. And so that's really the key piece. You want to do customer dev, you want to talk to them, survey them. What is that piece of tech that doesn't currently exist? And maybe even you can build it right away. Because for example, Wealthsimple was built on a spreadsheet for like 3 months before it became what it is now. Maybe that's something you can do too. You know, people talk about a minimum viable product. For many tech companies, the first version, the first minimum desirable product, which is one step over MVP, is a lot of humans at the back playing around in spreadsheets. Obviously, you can't scale that, you know, like they say in Y Combinator, do things that don't scale. But the reason why you do those things is so that you actually understand the problem you're solving as soon as possible.
Yeah. So did you have AI built into it right from day one? Or is that something that you've layered in? So similar to what you're saying, where it's like, okay, well, we didn't have maybe all of the things built out initially. So
we've had AI from the beginning, because what we were doing before we focused on DNA is we built what was the world's first video-based shopping mall. So what we did is we were using AI to fully digitize stores. You could go into a store, digitize it in about 4 hours, and then make it shoppable and deliverable in two. So that means that in one day we come in, we get the content, the AI uses OCR, machine vision, speech recognition, and other things to identify and make all your entire store available and shoppable and advertisable. And then we had people helping to do the delivery. And so we already had AI in our system, but the way the AI worked is all much more expanded and a bit more focused in the marketing space than it was before. So back then we were doing a few other content oriented things, but now it's much more, who's the right customer for this? We're doing, you know, AI driven demographic based geofencing. So that means you tell the system who your customer looks like using high level demographics, income, and so on, and we'll figure out which zip codes they live and work in, you know, the whole of the US and Canada. That's always been there at the beginning. So when DNA became the thing, we already had some AI, but we've obviously expanded its abilities, including the ability to monitor and optimize campaigns of just about any sort 100 times per day. The ability to do regression back propagation using any knowledge that come in from reports, knowledge from other data sources like the census or Uber or whatever other sources we're using, sticking them together and finding out insights that the platform can then use to make predictions, optimize those predictions over time. And so AI has always been a key piece for what we do. It's just that you can't have any AI without data sources. So ultimately, we spend a lot of time building, optimizing data sources in my company.
Yeah. And so you said that the video shopping mall is something you were doing previously. Obviously, that sounds very, well-suited to a COVID world where there was all the places were being shut down. And then you pivoted then to this business
we pivoted to DNA. And the reason why is, because I'm guessing that's the question. The reason why is at that time, small, medium-sized businesses didn't, they felt that they had a long time left to figure out the digital economy. Yeah. This is pre-COVID, right? I literally went on lots of business areas in Toronto, and I would walk onto my suits fell off my back, and I mean ripped off my back, speaking with, negotiating, and talking to these businesses to get them on the platform. But what I found was a couple of things. One, small businesses were not the right fit. I should have gone after mid-size or enterprise or franchise businesses at that phase. And why I say that is the small businesses didn't have the budgets to deal with it, and you couldn't use any small business as a reference to any other small business. Mm-hmm. And so even with DNA today, we've helped a lot of small businesses, but what we found is the medium-sized businesses and bigger, they just know a little bit more about what they're looking for. So it's easier to walk them through and get them the solutions they need. Smaller businesses need a little bit of help. So we worked with and partnered with Intuit as part of their AI Prosperity Accelerator to build another module, the strategy module. So we literally are building right now a growth strategy module where you give the AI, you answer 4 questions that the AI asks you, and it will literally build you an entire growth strategy that you can execute towards any goal. That was something that we literally had to spend a lot of time figuring out so that the SMBs can get and succeed in the new digital age. But you know, as a company, we are focused more right now on mid-market and higher, just because from a resource standpoint, it's easier for us to apply those resources. But we do aim on making it so that SMBs can survive as well.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So now the other thing too, like you said, that you built this business by bootstrapping it. And so you didn't have a big influx of cash come in. And so you've had to grow in a very measured way and figure out that revenue model.
That measured at the same time. Best way to say it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm curious now if, you were given a big suitcase full of money in 2020, what difference would that have made in the trajectory of your business? And what would you have done differently, I guess, over the last couple of years?
Well, if we had a big suitcase of money, we will not reveal how big the suitcase needed to be. Then we would have gone straight to making the growth conductor from day one. We would have built a whole team of integration specialists in our technology side, and then we would have built a whole team of conduction specialists, that's the AI for decisioning and optimization all the way through. So that by the middle of 2021, we would have had the growth conductor already, and we would be able to offer it to agencies and to larger businesses that need that capability upfront. But because of bootstrap, we have to move in a much more measured way. We have to be very careful about how we build. We have to identify all these workflows and how to get them working very well, but much more slowly. That's the thing, when you have a lot of money and you know how to use it, you can do amazing things. But when you don't have a lot of money, you have to use time to your benefit. And that's what we're doing so far.
Yeah, really good. Here's an interesting question that I ask some people, and that is, who would you like to have as an entrepreneur going through this with you? So it can be a famous entrepreneur, or it could be somebody that isn't famous. Who would you love to have on your journey?
Well, to be honest, I have an advisory board of amazing people who are on the journey with me right now.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I want to posit on any other person. Some people would say Bill Gates or the Elon Musks of the world, or maybe even Justin Trudeau. But I don't know that I would work really well with any of these people. I don't know them. I don't have a relationship with them. So I think the team we've got right now is a pretty amazing team. We've got advisors who have built amazing companies in the growth space, whether it's in PR or in advertising or in marketing. We've got people who are amazing at enterprise sales. We even have a former CEO of one of the biggest agencies in Canada who's recently become an advisor of ours. And so at this point, yes, it took some time. Remember what I said about networking? You go out and you build a network, and that network is able to help you get that boost that you need. So we're really right now, we're working on raising a round. We have actually got quite a few commitments in the round already. We're going to close it out. This is non-solicitation, to be very clear. But it's to say that we've built a team, we're expanding the team, and the team is going to help us to get to our nirvana. Some entrepreneur out there that, you know, that I don't personally know, I can't put any weight on it. I like the team I've got. I like the team I'm building. I like the people I've been interviewing for, you know, like literally for people to join my team in a senior role. I might be talking to you like for half a year or a year. And I love these guys and I can't wait for them to join us. So, yeah.
Yeah. Just out of curiosity, with the advisory team that you have, is that something that you had started like right from day one with an advisory team? Or is that something that you added to your team later on?
I added to the team later on. Always you want to have people that you speak to before you start any business.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't call them advisors. Those would be the people that you're bumping minds with, making sure that, you know, like they say somewhere in the Bible, you know, knife sharpens knife or something. You gotta have someone challenge you. But yeah, those aren't necessarily advisors. Advisors are not just people who can challenge you, they're people who have an interest in you succeeding in your business. So that means you're having regular conversations, you're talking to them about the challenges you're having, they're giving you advice or introductions to solutions. That to me is what a valuable advisor is. If you're not getting that additional step, that's a friend, that's a colleague, that's a helpful person, that's not an advisor.
Yeah. So as you've set that up, is it more of a formal board of advisors, or is it very informal?
It's an informal advisory. These people are informal advisors in the sense that they're not part of a board. To be part of the board, we have rules in our constitution of ownership and a few other things.
Yeah.
And as investors who are bigger come in, they would have some of those board seats. But the advisors I'm referring to are people who I might give some ownership to, you know, because we do have people in our that are my advisors that have some percentage of the company as incentives and just to say, hey, you know, I'm really serious about you being an advisor of mine. But they're not part of the board of advisors. No, they're not part of a formal board. I don't think it's, if you're a small company, I think it's not wise to have non-investors in your advisory board because they're not properly incentivized to make the right fiduciary decisions. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. You can have one or two people who are not investors come in later, but not at the beginning. It's not the same.
Yeah. It's thanks for sharing that, because I think there's a lot of businesses out there who would like to incorporate some sort of board within their structure, or some sort of advisory within their structure, and are struggling with how to sort that out. Is it formal? Is it informal? Is there ownership requirements? Is there not? Am I needing to pay them, or are they free? Mm-hmm. Right. And those kinds of
things. When you're still, seed stage, minimize your overhead. Having a board that you have to pay that is not an investor in you is a large overhead. Right. And if there are people that piss you off at some point, do you really want to keep that on? You know, it's one of those things where people are like, oh, wow, Zazy, I can't believe you said they piss you off. But the truth is, if it's your business and you've got the wrong team, you know, team at all levels, employees, founders, advisors, board, if you've got the wrong team at the earliest stages, you have to do whatever it takes to fix your team. And that means the opportunity and ability to change the team. And if it's not someone investing where they've got a vested formal interest, then you better keep that right. If you don't keep that right, if you give it away too easy, think about it this way. How bad is it to get advice from 20 different people giving you 20 different thoughts when none of them have a vested interest? You're going to get confused as hell. So just piece of advice.
Yeah, for sure. Sage advice for sure. Well, thank you, Zay-Zay. I really appreciate you sharing your experience and explaining to us a little bit about what you've got going on over there and how you've grown what you have as well. It's like really exciting. And like I said, it's definitely relevant to our space, that I work within here in marketing and advertising. And so it's something that we're going to have some continued conversations for. I can guarantee that. Yeah. So if anybody else wanted to connect with you, though, what's the best way of reaching out to you?
Yo, reaching out to me is very, very easy. You can email me at zeze@beam.city. That is zeze@beam.city. Or you can go on the website, beam.city, and chat with me on our chat box. We literally have a chat box right there. It's manned by a human. It's not an AI. So that if you've got any questions about our platform, about marketing or sales, or you just want to say hi to Zeze, pop on there, say hi. And someone will tell me and I'll literally show up. So send me an email, zeze@beam.city, or go chat with me literally right on my website.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for that. And for those of you who are watching this and really enjoyed this episode, you can check out our archives over at amplifyyourbusiness.ca. And we are available on all your favorite podcasting platforms. So you can search for Amplify Your Business there as well. Thank you once again, Zeze. I really appreciate you taking the time today.
Thank you, Lance. And I love being live with you today, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
And to everybody else out there, have a prosperous day.